Blog Talk Radio.
Is reparations enough, and can we afford to wait? That's the topic for tonight's discussion. We'll be right back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. ULU members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Shibaka, who, like me, is a member of Ulu. Peace, Brother Shibaka. How are you doing this evening?
Peace and greetings to you, Sister Q. I am doing fine. I'm really anxious to get in the topic, and I look forward to discussion tonight. I'd like to also greet the family members who are there and ready. Hopefully, they, with their questions and comments, will also actively engage. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We look forward to the topic, to the conversation as well. Brother Shibaka, before you begin tonight's discussion, which is reparations enough and can we afford to wait, will you please briefly tell the family how you define reparations?
Yeah, thank you, Sister, for that question. I define it in terms of some fundamental concepts, one being the root of the word reparations, repair. Or group, all right? And therefore,
Brother Shibaka, you're breaking up on us.
Oh, sorry. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay. All right. So as I was saying, sorry about that. As I was saying, the fundamental or breakdown of the word reparations, its base word is repair. And essentially what repair means is to, an injustice was done to a person or a group of people, all right, by another person or another group, all right, and injuries were sustained as a consequence of that, all right, then a person, all right, if they go to legal proceedings, would be required to get some allowances of a
You're breaking up again.
Okay, what's wrong with this phone?
Somebody don't want
can
to
hear
what you guys. I can hear you now.
Okay, yeah, I guess somebody's listening and said, well, we're going to break that up. Anyway, as I was saying, so, you know, if injuries were done, all right, then, you know, international law, all right, required that a person who was or group that was responsible for injury to a person or group, all right, in some way make amends to repair that person back to being whole. In other words, what do I mean being whole? How I was or how we were before the injuries occurred. For an example, all right, if I had land and farmland and my economy was based on my servicing the land, producing crops, harvesting, and then taking those crops and then selling them, and then all of a sudden I have a legal right to the land that I'm using for agricultural purposes, and all of a sudden someone or a group comes in and disrupt that, ruins the economy, all right, and I am able to, all right, take them, you know, to some legal proceeding and win, then the person would be responsible to get me to come up with the necessary resources to get me where I was before the injury occurred from their interruption. All right. Okay. So essentially it's to get me back to where I was. All right. So that I could continue my life, my culture, my country, how it was, to get me back to where I was.
Okay.
Essentially that's how I see the word reparation, to repair the injuries caused to where I was. As best as can be, as best can
Thank
be
you
done.
For that. Thank you for that. Thank you. Okay. So we can begin tonight's conversation then. Is reparations enough and can we afford to wait?
Yeah, thank you, sister, for that question, because it's extremely important, because there's a lot of chatter, you know, throughout the country on reparations. But by way of introduction, I'd like to talk a little bit briefly on the last days of Booker T. Washington, and maybe a minute or two on the current debate surrounding COVID-19 vaccines and, of course, monkeypox coming in. And I'm sure that the family, if they have not been up on the news, or at least if they have not been up on the news other than CNN, and plus it's related to the question of reparations. I'm going to make that possible.
Okay.
I had the pleasure of last week listening to an interview of a sister by the name of Miss Paulette Horton. All right, she's
dropping again.
Hello?
Yes, I lost you. After you mentioned Sister Paulette Horton, I didn't hear anything after that.
Right. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. All right, Paulette Horton. She's the author. She wrote four books. One of the books she wrote was Death in 60 Days, Who Silenced Booker T. Washington? Again, let me repeat that title. You can go online and, you know, just put, if you go online through the internet and in the search engine, put all, or you could put Death in 60 Days, Who Silenced Booker T. Washington. Some information on that book, Sister Paulette Horton will come up.
Okay.
Now, she was doing an interview, and what she, from her research, and she's from Mobile, Alabama, and let me tell you how she got involved in that research. She's from Mobile, Alabama, and Mobile was one of the places in which Dr. Booker T. Washington would have his vacation. You know, he would come down from Tuskegee and come down to Mobile, all right? And he has a little place outside of Mobile, all right, in which he's done. So she was doing, she's a very religious person, she was doing a book, you know, on the history of the black church in Mobile, Alabama, all right? And as a consequence of doing an investigation, she came upon some preachers of the various churches that she visited, and one of them directed her to what happened to Booker T. Washington on his last visit there before he went to New York. And so she thought that was rather strange. You know, she, you know, read, you know, that he, according to hypertension, complications, maybe a heart attack, which led to his death. He was in New York, got sick, came to back home to Tuskegee and died. That's the account. I saw that account from my own examination of papers that I looked at, one that was there in Alabama, another one that was in Kansas City that wrote about it. All right,
okay.
Basically said the same thing. All right, but now... What was interesting is that Booker T. Now, you know, he, to fund the institution, he did get some white money. Okay, as you know, the institutions that were set up by white money. You know, all of them, Howard University, all of them were set up. You know, they were land grant colleges. They were set up by white money. Okay,
right.
But it was what Booker T. was doing with the money that he had in setting up Tuskegee Institute, as it was called at that time. It's called Tuskegee. Anyway, he went to New York. He had a speaking engagement in New York and also in Connecticut. All right, from her research.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when he got back from Connecticut, he came down to New York. And then when he was in New York, according to her, you know, he met with a couple blacks. Then he went and had dinner by himself. And they think, at least according to her, somebody slipped something in his meal and he got very sick that day. and then was mm-hmm. taken to Rockefeller. Now they said he got sick. That's from her, because she got mm-hmm. she was a nurse, so she was able to get some of the medical records and could understand the medical records then. So she understood. He got now check this out. Took him to Rockefeller's Institute,
mm-hmm.
To be treated. Okay. They said that they couldn't treat him and that he was going to die. All right. And so he said he doesn't want to die in the North. He's going to come back home to the South. And that's where mm-hmm. Tuskegee. Now, according to her report, he was able to, even though they said he's going to die, you know, in a few mm-hmm. days, a couple of days. I don't know how mm-hmm. they got it. I don't know how they got it that precise. Because if you have a high blood pressure,
right?
Okay, so his wife was contacted. She came up to New York and took mm-hmm. him back to Tuskegee. In which case, he died. All right. Mm-hmm. Now, her examination also revealed, all right, that funding.
You're breaking
New
up
York
again.
And Connecticut. On,
okay, say the part about the funding again. You were saying funding New York, Connecticut. That's what.
Yeah,
I
he
heard.
Was funding. He was being funded by the Rockefeller of a number, you know, philanthropists. All right,
mm-hmm.
By the Rockefeller Foundation, as it was initiated at that time, because he went mm-hmm. to the Rockefeller Institute, you know, which was, but anyway, through her research, she found out, now remember now, the Tuskegee experiment happened in 1932. She found out from her research that the Rockefeller Institute was conducting syphilis experiments on immigrants coming into New York, and that what they wanted to do, because they was funding Tuskegee, they wanted easy access to the Africans at Tuskegee,
mm-hmm.
Americans at Tuskegee, and rejected that. Now, that was one cause, because they had made that offer to them that they might have wanted to get rid of them and poison them.
Mm-hmm.
So, from his great-grandson, listening to an interview by him, who said not only was that the case, but also Booker T. You remember, Booker T was noted throughout the South. Most of the black people at that time were located in the South.
Mm-hmm.
Could have anywhere from 80 to 90% of the black population located in the South. They knew Booker T. Washington. They knew about Tuskegee. And Tuskegee, as Booker T. Washington had it at that time, he was involved in trade, but there was not only trade, you know, those kind of skills. He was involved in industry because Booker T., in his visits to the North, saw how the North was industrializing. All right.
Okay.
So he was trying to create industry. All right. Black people mm-hmm. behind the industry, because most resources, all right, were located in the South. All right. And mm-hmm. Most of the skills were located in the South. In fact, in that whole area of Tuskegee, because of what he had trained, the cadre of people he had trained, all right, white folks was coming and to Tuskegee to get the kind of skills necessary to build roads, to build their schools, to build their houses, and build this. All right, it was almost like a Tulsa, Oklahoma that we normally hear about, talked about.
Right.
All right,
okay.
And it's around mm-hmm. the same time. This was in the early 1900s, and we know mm-hmm. Tulsa was 1920, 21. All right, so that in itself, all right, so he was taking the money and doing more than what the traditional land-grant institutions were doing, all right? He was developing, in my view, this is Shabaka's view, this is my interpretation, he was laying down the foundation of an economy for black folks, particularly in the South.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This
mm-hmm.
is, which is one of the reasons that Marcus Garvey communicated with him to see if it could be replicated in the Caribbean, and wanted to come to meet him. And remember now, after the death of Booker T. Washington, when Marcus Garvey came, his power base was in the South. That was already set up for him, you know, by Booker T. Then he got a few people in the North, all right? But mostly he began to get, you know, that became outside. So he basically took off where Booker T.
You breaking again?
In Africa. He broke up again?
Yeah, say the last part. After you mentioned Marcus Garvey, then you said start to say something else about Booker T. That part we didn't
Booker
hear.
T. in his writings was interested in developing the economy for blacks in the South, in the Caribbean, South America, Africa. That's essentially gave Marcus Garvey the idea of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African League. All right, he came there. Marcus Garvey came 2 years after Booker T. died. Booker T. died in November of 1915. He went to New York the end of October 1915. All right, suffered something. All right, which they claim was a stroke of some sort. Although he was able to walk on the train. Stroke, right? All right, get on the train that was taking him back. In fact, the train that was taking him back was also of a person connected to the Rockefeller Institute, who owned the train, that particular train to travel get him back.
Right.
All right,
mm-hmm.
All right. So I wanted to mention that to say the background of this. Her recent Rockefellers and others, Carnegies and others, particularly Rockefeller, because Rockefeller is Standard Oil. After processing oil, they saw also be processed, all right, into chemicals to treat this. People at that time was using home remedies. There was natural passing, and doctors was using those skills. Rockefeller came in at the late 1890s, early 1900s, all right, and started contributing, donating to medical schools, which was preaching homeopathy, you know, homeopathic medicine, all right, naturopathic medicine. That's what they were doing. And then all of a sudden it came allopathic, all right, which is the chemical-based pharmaceuticals that we are subjected to now, all right.
Mm-hmm.
And they paused them as a consequence. They paused them, in my opinion, in my estimation, because, one, he did not want to allow – first, the use of Africans as guinea pigs in their syphilis experiment, and because they found out, all right, that he was doing a little bit more with the money that he was getting in training blacks, all right, which would compete with the industry upcoming in the North. And he had the good, and they couldn't control him. Well, if you can't control him, I'll eliminate him.
Exactly.
That's one thing I wanted to say. All right, but the key I wanted to note here is that he was interested in my turn, nation building, all right, and training. He had many debates with Du Bois, and I think during those debates, all right, he divulged some of the stuff that he probably wouldn't have divulged after taking, you know, the Europeans' money to do what he wanted to do. And so that should be a lesson for us if what I'm saying is true or has some validity, all right, as we begin to move, all right, remember now the reparation movement is to get the resources that whites stole and try to have them give it back. I'll say something about that in a minute, too. All right. Now, what's happening with the debate on COVID? Well, there's not very much debate on COVID. You know, the COVID is all according to them. Has generated into many variants. All right, right now it might be contagious, which means you might catch them, but apparently it don't seem like a lot of people are dying unless you what is now causing people to die are the vaccines. I think they're saying something like 1 in 5,000. It may be a little bit higher or a little bit lower, but they're causing deaths in people that shouldn't have deaths. athletes are falling out because they're having myocarditis, which is the inflammation of the heart, and they're young, in their 20s and their 30s. They're athletic. They shouldn't be having those diseases. And then the pharmaceuticals are trying to say that it's not being caused by the vaccine, which is a lie. All right, mm-hmm. Because they didn't have any problem. They didn't have any problem like that before. Monkeypox. Got to say something about monkeypox because that's the new thing. Monkeypox mm-hmm. started right after the mass vaccination of the vaccine.
Right.
The World Health Organization has said that this is a health emergency of international proportion. 35,000 people have been affected globally out of a population of 8 billion. 35,000 people have been affected out of a population. It hasn't. And look, it's mostly now monkeypox. They say when you see it on the TV, they always show a black arm and, you know, with these look like chicken pox lesions on them. Right. Yeah. All right. Africa has the lowest case. Most of the cases are in Europe and America. All right. They don't show no white arms. He's showing a black arms, which is the least case, which is almost the same thing they did with COVID. All right.
Right.
Nobody has died. Out of 35,000 cases, 35,000 infected people, no deaths.
Okay.
But yet it's a global emergency. All right. Mm-hmm. It's a lie. All right. Now,
sure.
The World Health Organization, all right, had a panel. One of the panels was to discuss not only monkeypox, but also vaccine, general distribution of vaccine. They call it pandemic preparedness. They want to try to have a pandemic preparedness treaty, all right, which was voted again, because I think I told you the last time I was on the show, against the African countries, voted against that, and then that died. All right?
Right.
So they tabled it. So they hadn't gotten rid of it. So what they did, they had another session about the middle of this month. Let me tell you what they did. They had this. They had what they call their expert panel to talk about monkeypox.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, their meetings are open to the public. You know, they're transparent. All right, you can see the meetings. I've seen some of the meetings. You know, I turn it off because I get bored. All right?
Right.
But now they had secret meetings. This is from what I understand from some of the reporters. This is rare for them to have secret meetings, all right, to talk about from their expert panels, all right?
Right.
After their expert panels, it came out that some members of the expert panels didn't think that that monkeypox at this time warranted international concern. The Secretary General of the World Health Organization, who happened to be Ethiopian, Tedros, Dr. Tedros, who, by the way, isn't a medical doctor. He's a got his PhD in philosophy, which is interesting.
Okay.
He now made it, the monkeypox, all right, and then to try to get vaccines. 35,000 in Europe haven't killed anybody.
Okay, I missed the part in there. Basically, I missed everything you said after Dr. Tedros is not a medical doctor. He has a doctor.
He's not a medical doctor. He's a doctor of philosophy. I think his PhD was in philosophy. All right, I could be wrong on that, but I know he doesn't have a medical degree or a PhD in bioscience or biochemistry or any of that stuff, molecular biology, none of that stuff. That's not his. The Secretary General, who basically runs the WHO, you know, he's got in May, so he's got a 5-year term, so he'll be there for 5 years. Anyway, some things of it, what I wanted to share. This information right now that I'm in operations is because it shows that in involved in the reparations movement, they have.
You're breaking up again, brother. You broken up again. You started to say you wanted to show that in the reparations movement, and then after that, I didn't hear anything from you.
Okay, yeah. Can you hear me?
I hear you now.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can
okay,
hear you.
Okay, I'm showing bars. You know, this. I'm showing bars. Okay, well, what I was saying is that the is because we people involved in a reparations negotiate, we need to know who we're negotiating with, and that if we don't negotiate it as in a position of strength, we already see what these people are doing. They are violating their own rules. This guy unilaterally, this panel of experts, and made a unilateral statement, and now he's bringing in pharmaceuticals who's going to be ramping up, looking for pay of billions of dollars, all right, mm-hmm. for 35,000 people that haven't died, okay?
Right.
All right, so I was here, the corruption, these represent people, right, that are going to be done with. All right, now, am I continuing? South Africa, all right, you know, went through an apartheid area, and they had a reconciliation hearing, truth mm-hmm. and reconciliation hearing that was put together by the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
Right.
The CIA had worked with the South African government at the time as they mm-hmm. was fighting the rebels or the freedom fighters to develop biological warfare weapons that would target blacks in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
How successful they were, we don't know, but that was the intent, and that came out during the reconciliation hearing. These mm-hmm. are the people we got to negotiate with. You understand what I'm talking about? These
right.
are the people we're supposed to negotiate with for reparation. All right, mm-hmm. now, Toni Morrison said, and it's an interesting statement that she made, the function, the very function of racism is a distraction. It keeps you from doing your work over again, your reason for being. What I interpret that to mean is that you're always trying to prove to the person who is keeping you down that you're human and you have a right to be able to enjoy what they're enjoying, and that it keeps you always doing that, and at the same time you're getting no relief in doing that. Ta-Nehisi Coates, who wrote the book The Case for Reparation several years ago,
mm-hmm.
he made this statement. 250 years ago of slavery, 90 years of Jim Crow, 60 years of separate but equal, 35 years of racist housing, until we reckon with our compounding moral debts, America will never be whole. Now, what he was saying was that from slavery to Jim Crow, all right, to separate but equal, the racist housing property practices, all right, America will never be whole. That's America, this major debt. All right, he would be right,
mm-hmm.
you know, if, he would be right, if the European population that I just described earlier, all right, since that made a mistake, but they made no mistake. They didn't bring black folks over here to be humans. We were inhuman, according to them, 3/5. And the only reason they said 3/5, so they could get enough people in Congress, all right? So we were not considered human. We were considered slaves, cattle slaves, all right? But I don't want to just talk because Brother Coates is relevant to recent. And I want to really give a view, a historical view of the reparation movement, because I'm going to critique it. All right. And then I'm trying to bring it home. Belinda Royale in 1783 had petitioned the Massachusetts. This was during slavery now. And this was before the United States became the United States. All right. Petitioned the Massachusetts General Assembly. All right. Requesting a pension from the proceeds of her enslaver estate because it was the product of her own uncompensated labor.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Now, I want to add that reparations is not compensation, but it could include compensation, particularly if what you produced was stolen
okay.
as a result of the injury that you sustained. You
mm-hmm.
got me?
Yeah, right. Okay.
All right. 1865, the Union General William T. Sherman issued special order number 15 that allocated 40 acres of land in South Carolina to Florida to the formerly enslaved Africans.
Mm-hmm.
Never got it.
Right.
1870, Henrietta Woods, a free African, successfully sued for reparations from her kidnappers who sold her into slavery.
Mm-hmm.
1898.
Okay.
Now, there was others, but I'm picking those that are usually brought out in black folks' search of the reparations.
Okay.
There was always
okay.
attempt, particularly in the North, all right, because the North's kind of slavery was a little bit different from the slavery that was practiced because cotton was a major export, all right, and they needed a lot of labor to do that exporting
right.
and other
For
things.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
1898, Callie House and Isaiah Dickerson organized the National Ex-Slave Mutual Relief Bounty and Pension Association with the goal of providing compensation to formerly enslaved Africans, mutual aid, and burial costs.
Mm-hmm.
That was Callie House. She basically started the movement. 1919, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, African, League. All right,
mm-hmm.
articulated an ethical basis for reparations with a call to the U.S. to support economic development repatriation to Africa in response to the American apartheid and terror tactics that was happening to us. You know, we were being lynched, you know.
Right.
You got that
yeah.
understanding, right? It wasn't a picnic
mm-hmm.
down there. Even after 1865, it wasn't a picnic. All right,
right.
This is 1919, okay? 1950, in the 1950, the Nation of Islam issued a call, all right, for reparations in the form of land, all right, in the form of land consisting of states in the southern USA. 1957-59, Queen Mother Audre Moore and the Universal Association of Ethiopian Women, all right, Queen Mother Moore. Petition the UN Nation, all right, a crime of genocide, and issued that petition for self-determination, land, and reparations. Queen Mother Moore was one of the founders of the PGRNA, all right, as well as one of the forerunners of the National Coalition of Black for Reparations.
PGRNA.
Yeah, go ahead.
I lost what you said after the PGRNA about Queen Mother Moore.
Yeah, she set that up as well as the forerunners that helped to set up the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America, which was in Cobra. So Queen Mother Moore has been in more than we know about the National Coalition of Blacks. In 1989, and COBRA was set up in 1987. In 1989, John Conyers, who was a congressman at the time, introduced H.R. 40, which was a study bill to the House of Representatives, all right, to study, to have a study on reparation. That bill was amended, you know, in the about 2015 before he
mm-hmm.
died, all right, to include not only a study but also remedies because at that time the committees and association out of the UN had come up and had deemed that slavery was chattel slavery was a crime against humanity, and had set some guidelines in which people of African descent or anybody that had been enslaved, exploited, just remedies. All right.
Okay.
And of course, the Nation of Islam also supported that movement, and even Salih Muhammad of the Lost Found Nation of Islam in 1974 set a petition for reparation. So it's not it has a whole history. Now, recently, which is interesting, in the last few years, a number of reparations has
Brother
up on
Shabasa,
the scene.
You're breaking up. And also there's someone with a question or comment. So I'm going to take that and
okay,
and come back to the finish of your the various movements. Caller with the last four digits, 1249, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes, yes. Greetings. And my name is Brother Lamar. I actually wanted Brother Shabaka to finish his point, because I'm glad that he continued the chronology and that he didn't stop it in Cobra. And I'm interested, can I allow you to let him finish his comments about the new reparations movement, and then take me back off so I can respond to him?
All right, we'll do. Thank you. Okay, Brother Shabaka.
Hear me. Hopefully I don't break up too much, which is odd because this usually don't break up. I was saying that, you know, in the past 3 to 4 years, some other organizations has popped up. Also, simultaneously, there has been some money that has been thrown into the reparation movement. Before that time, particularly, and COBRA was primarily, and then NARC, which is the was one of the other entities, National Organization of African American Reparation Council, that came out.
Mm-hmm.
Also in 2015, and a number of people in NCOBRA was also part of that. It was it formed itself like a commission because H.R. 4 formed a commission. All right. Now, what happened as a consequence, and this is my assessment, and this is not necessarily a condemnation of any group that came on the scene, because any group could came on the scene and indicate that you're not doing what you we thought you would be doing, all right? So they have a right to do that, all right? But it so happened that, you know, white folks started throwing money in there, and then we got various views on what reparations should be. And, you know, because of the sake of time, and I want to get back to the brother's question, it seemed like reparations – had out of these organizations, some of these organizations on delineating, all right, between those who would make the pitch to the white man, all right, about who should see, or just black folks who have ancestry here. What about the black folks who migrated?
You're breaking up again, Brother Shabaka.
I agree. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yes.
Okay. Some of the groups like the Bohemians from the people from the Bahamas was probably one of the first groups that came here, and that was in the 1800s. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we have lately, you know, in the 1900s, particularly mid 1900s, particularly after some of the African countries, some of the Caribbean countries got their independence from the former colonizers. All right, they migrated because they looked at the United States as being here. All right, and so some people say, well, we don't want them to get any reparations. All right, because they didn't suffer slavery. They might have suffered slavery someplace else, but they didn't suffer slavery here. All right, then you had some that says, well. So was that. It was that delineation, are the people here and the people there. The problem I see with that is the fact that they don't know that that whole slave period was a cooperation, a collaboration between European power. They were competing with each other, all right? But the competition with each other
they all had their rules about when they divided up Africa, when they attacked Africa and enslaved Africans, all right, they had their rules about what they were going to do, all
right? Right.
They didn't, that was a commodity. What they wanted to do was to have these folks, all right, produce products that would be sold on the European market, okay, or the American market, but primarily Europe, all right? I mean, before the Civil War, 60% of cotton was exported from the United States, and it made up 80% of the European market. So the Civil War, all right, caused Europe to go into recession.
Okay.
You understand? All right? All right. That's why after the Civil War, you had sharecropping, you had convict leasing to keep blacks there in the South, all right, to make sure to get that cotton industry going. You had industrialization going on in the North, all right, and you had what I talked about earlier, Booker T's Washington plan, how we could fit into that industrialization, all right, how we could capitalize on that industrialization, all
right?
And so you had all of that going on. So let me stop here, and maybe I can address the brother's question because we're running out of time.
Okay, let me bring him back. Peace, brother.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, greetings again. Yeah, I don't have a question. I just wanted to kind of chime in on the conversation. And I really appreciate you all for having this conversation. In my opinion, as Pan-Africanist, as elder Pan-Africanist, I love to hear you all have these conversations weekly about these topics, especially with what's going on now and a lot of anti-black sentiments coming from immigrants and all of that. But just to the subject of reparations, yes. We are so proud and so glad and so thankful that we really got a sensible a reparations package now. Delineation was what this generation X and younger is pushing for. It makes sense. And it's justified by the work of Dr. William Stanley Darity. The reparations that we're advocating here in the United States is against the United States. We're not going after Britain. We're not going after France. Those countries that were enslaved or that were colonized by those nations, they have all the right to go after that claim, and we totally support them. It was France that colonized Haiti. And, of course, and also those, particularly the Caribbean nations, they have a claim as well. They have formed an entity called CARICOM. Ironically, CARICOM doesn't include blacks in the United States, and neither should it. The brother mentioned, Bahamas. Ironically, my paternal grandfather is Bahamas, but my lived experience is black American. Our claim and the eligibility criteria fairly simple. You just need to be able to trace an ancestor back to the 1870 census and have claimed black, Negro, African American, on your life, 10 to 12 years before the onset of a reparations program. We have to delineate because there's not flat blackness. The problem that we discovered is that, it's been kind of common Pan-Africanist ideology, is that melanin binds us, and nothing we discovered to our surprise and dismay and to our horror and shock and grief, that it really doesn't. It's because we were also it was those West African nations that sold us into slavery, not stole, not kidnapped, but sold us into slavery. And of course, we are a different lineage group. We were uprooted from Africa, came here to the United States, created a whole nother lineage, built one of the greatest nations on earth through our blood, sweat, tears, bodies, everything. Our case is exceptional and unique here again in the United States. Now, I'm not saying those other groups can't sue the United States as well for reparations because of maybe the role that it played in the global slave trade. By all means, go right ahead, but that is a separate claim, and that's what we're saying.
Yeah,
let me stop
you for a minute. Yeah, let me stop because we got time. you know, part of what you're saying is true, and I can see that, all right, because number one, the way reparation was defined initially, all right, it said, you notice that I said the reparations was from Africa, I mean from enslaved period on up to the present time. See, when you come out your house, the cop doesn't say, are you from Trinidad, Nigeria, or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's no talking point that we debunked. Yeah, that's no talking point that we debunked. But there's a difference between an encounter and an outcome. Yeah, they'll
no,
stop.
No. What I'm saying, brother, is that I don't deny that there might be a different way in which reparation is applied to somebody that may have came here, but that they had experienced discrimination, housing, and all that other kind of stuff. If they look like
agreed.
You and I. All right.
Yeah, agreed.
If you say the claim going back to certain,
yeah.
And again, I got to remember now, we're talking about, and keep in mind what I said, I listed those things right there to tell you that the European doesn't care about law. Who are we making these petitions to?
The
who
United
are we making
States
these petitions to?
Yeah.
The
United States
who
of America. I love to.
Let me tell you this. There's 574.
We know that. 535.
Native Americans, all right, that identified, all right, that supposedly have got their reparations. They out there on those reservations, all right, non-productive land. They under the Department of the Interior. How they feel. They got worse health conditions than what we have. So my whole thing is not for us to split to develop the strategy how we make that benefits all of us.
We differ on that. And plus those Native Americans, they enslaved us as well.
We don't have to differ on that. I can give you the case of COVID. There was collaboration for over 190 countries. Where did that collaboration come from? It sure didn't come from me. All right, so you got to deal with the collaboration that is going on right now.
Yeah, I just want to stick to
the white man is not worried about African Americans because they make up 45% of the population. He wants to control 8 billion.
I want to interject here right now, please,
because we're almost out of time, Brother Lamar. I want to give Brother Shabaka a chance to finish his presentation, but I want to say thank you for your input, and we probably will be having some more conversation on reparations, and we'd like you to join us at that time. Okay?
Most definitely. So, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate your comments, but I'm trying to get it where it's global, because the attack on us is global.
Let's talk offline where it can be fair. Let's talk offline.
We can do that, but I'm just giving my views. You know, that's you have a right to call and impress your view. I'm just saying, is it sustainable? If it depends on the U.S. government, then we haven't learned anything, and all this stuff that I listed, going back, you know, two centuries, is meaningless because they have not showed anywhere where they abide by any law except their law, and so we have to take a different posture. Which is why, can we wait? All right, right now, they talk about global warming. Okay, global warming, they're saying right now by 2030, we don't have much time, you know, that we not be able to reverse our ability to live on the earth. Well, what can we do in 8 years if they are in fact true? All right, well, we do have a technique, and I think Ulu has a technique to be able to address that. And it doesn't necessarily have to deal with addressing the reparation question, all right, because we've seen how much money we have been able to generate, all right, just ourselves foolishly spending over $1.5 trillion, all right? So, and we can do a lot with that. And so the thing is, in addition to your quest or call for reparation, whatever platform you want to take it on, you have to have an economic process that you depend on yourself, because you can on the European. If you entirely depend on the European, you know, then, you know, he's laughing at you while he has COVID vaccine out there designed to kill at least a tenth of the population on the earth, maybe 15% or more, just through that vaccine. And now he's coming up with monkeypox, 35,000 people dead.
You're breaking up again.
And it looked like he's doing it. All right. So I'm saying the only thing that we have right now is, I think, of a solution is the creation of cells in those communities, regardless where those communities are, because those communities have to network. It can't be inside the United States because we're only 45 million. All right. We got, if you look at black folks, we got 1.7 billion people. The European has 1 billion people.
Okay.
He doesn't want us to live. He needs to curtail. We have the highest birth rate in the world outside of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have it inside of the U.S. because we want to capitulate and do what the Europeans say in terms of family planning, other kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have to be able to develop an industry. We have to develop an industry. We are in control of the resources. Those resources can go anywhere as long as we have control. And if, you know, 45 million people inside the United States can't do it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
By themselves.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't alienate, you know, because all of us had experience. All of us were separated. I have Bahama, got ancestry from West Africa. All right, well, we already know that, all right? So the person who was stopped in the Bahamas just made us, he was stopped here as opposed to going to Mobile Bay or Charlotte, South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, all right?
That was it.
You know, the ship went past the Bahamas up the coast or to Mobile Bay, you know?
Right, gotcha.
What's the difference? All right. No, what I'm trying to say is that the solution that we have must be Pan-African, and it must have a Pan-African solution. All right. The Pan-African solution, you can do whatever you want on the reparation end. I wish you luck. But fundamentally, we have to depend on ourselves. We have to develop our strategy, and that strategy must have an economic component associated with it. It must also have sovereignty. Sovereignty means I'm not depending for my livelihood on that person, the pain.
Okay, Brother Shibaka, I didn't hear what you said. You started to define sovereignty, and you broke up after that.
If sovereignty is not included, all right, then we still remain to be subject to those people, all right, who've inflicted the pain on us initially.
Right, gotcha.
So we must have a way. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to talk to them, but when I talk to them, I'm in a different position than I was four centuries ago.
For sure. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, for now you can come to the table as an equal at the very least.
We got to come to the table because called local reparations, and all reparations is that there is not really very little black input. The input is coming from the top down. Well, see, you know, that's going to create some problems to begin with because they're looking at to sustain. The other thing is that I wanted to bring up, didn't have time, all right, is that the United States government is bankrupt. The United States government, because we're attacking the government. We're not attacking industry. We're attacking government. All right.
Mm-hmm.
United States government collects $4 trillion a year through tax revenue. It spends $6 trillion, all right, throughout the year. It has a $1.5 trillion interest that pays for the $30 trillion debt that it's a bankrupt country.
Right.
It cannot sustain itself. $30 trillion debt, spends $6 trillion, all right, only collects $4 trillion, all right, and has to pay $1.5 trillion of that.
Right.
right? I mean, hey, look, it's on borrowed time. That's what I'm saying. No, it's on borrowed time. We got
now
we ain't talking about the other folks who collect, you know, now. We haven't talked about the Rockefellers and all those Gates and all of the other kind of stuff who have assets as a consequence of our labor, which produced that. And I wanted to make a good point, the brother. Yeah, we did, and it's important that we did create the wealth that this society. But at the time, considered human beings. That doesn't mean anything. It just means that by law, you don't have a right to petition the government.
Brother Shabaka, that whole last statement that you were making was chewed up. I can't hear you right now.
Today, you can't hear me? Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you. I can hear you. Now I can't.
Obey it. Okay. Or, well, I'll listen to the recording. This is showing that I got all the bars and I should be speaking out. But anyway, I was just saying that the government is trying to, the people who really that have put it from slavery the time, they got hidden assets. We don't know where they are. Who are funding the reparation movement are the same people who passed years out of slavery up to the present time. All right. Well, they want us to tax the government, which is bankrupt. They don't want us to go after them, which is where the real wealth is. And then we're not only talking about wealth. We're talking about a whole bunch of other things, injuries that we're staying. The pro-justice system. Another point of interest, true, false. All right, our gods were denied. Everything was denied. We couldn't take care of our family like we wanted to take care.
Okay,
well,
go ahead.
Let me end it here because you know there is some problem with the train.
Okay.
And
we'll take this back up another time next month. Okay.
Yeah,
so thank you, Brother Shabaka, for the information that you shared. What we could hear was very good and very informative, and the way you brought the timeline shows that. It didn't end when we were told it ended, and it's going on today, and what's happening today is directly related to stuff that was going on in 1873, 17, whatever. So I want to thank you for sharing your information with us tonight. I also want to thank everybody that joined us this evening, and we'd like to invite you to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.